All right, it's the world famous Phil Hendry Show here. This is Monday, and we're also live streaming for all of our folks on, you know, online right now. It's a Sunday night for those of you listening on Monday, and for those of you watching and listening on Sunday, we're doing this for Monday. And the people watching on video were watching pretty much the pre-show. They saw that I had to restart this. I restarted it because I was getting messages from people concerning my health that has been compromised here the last few days. As I mentioned to you guys on the chat on Friday night, and some of you may have been with me and some of you may not have been with me, and I'm going to do a Facebook Live after this, is that I came down with some kind of a chest cold last Wednesday on my way to see Phil Proctor and his wonderful family to interview Phil. And I think it was just because it was a long day. It was a hot damn day and I hadn't slept the night before. One thing, you're going to get sick, man, if you don't sleep. And I'm like the world's worst sleeper. So there you have it. This thing evolved into, just didn't evolve. It's a cold yet. But then on top of that, just as an extra added attraction, just as a bonus, I got pink eye. Conjunctivitis is what they call it. And if you're watching this on videocast, I'm going to zoom in here. And you can see my eyes. They're red, man. They don't look as bad as they did. Friday night is when it happened. And I thought, I must have an allergy or something, you know, because my eyes were tearing up. I say, this has got to be an allergy. It's supposed to be a function of the cold or something. But it was getting to the point where it was a pain in the ass. I couldn't see anything, you know, and I was having to wipe my eyes a lot. I said, what is this, you know? And finally, they began to itch. And it didn't take too long for me to figure that there was something going on with them more than just an allergy. And I looked in the mirror and I had those red eyes like the zombies in 28 Days Later. And I thought, well, this is kind of a cool effect. In fact, the cat, and this will show you how paranoid I am, or maybe just easily amused or easily weirded out or something. But the cat, I swear to God, this cat that we have, Thunder, started walking around like she wasn't sure who I was. Seriously, I would come into the room and she'd come up the stairs and look at me, and then she'd split and hide under a bed. And then she'd come out from the bed and I'd start walking toward her and she'd split and go back under the bed. Weird stuff like that, you know. And the first thing you think is there somebody in the house, you know? Or was there someone in the house that she didn't know and she's afraid? No, that wasn't the case. So I must look different. And the only thing that's different about me are my eyes. And then I go to this. I go to animals communicate with the eyes, don't they? I mean, the eyes are really important with animals. You notice that cats and dogs don't stare at each other. That's considered confrontational and aggressive. Cats and dogs will look and they turn away. You see them do that a lot. And when they look at us, they often blink and turn away. Cats will blink. That's kind of a friendly thing. That's a friendly nod, you know. But to actually stare, if you see an animal staring at you, you know instinctively, you know there's something about to happen, right? If you've ever had a dog come at you, or even a cat, they're staring right at you. And it ain't friendly when a cat or a dog does that. So there's something significant with the eyes, obviously. If there's significant stuff with humans. Look at this. My right eye's itching, so I got to grab my little box of tissue that I carry with me. Jesus. So there's something in the eyes, right? And so I'm thinking, what is this? Maybe she sees my red eyes and I look like a man beast, you know? Like, she suddenly doesn't recognize me. I have no idea. I started kind of laughing about that to myself. And then I just went about my business and she cooled out. I don't know what her trip was, but so this damn red eye, this pink eye, and I've been back and forth communicating with Maria about that. She, by the way, got admitted to to a doctorate program, which she's very excited about, and everybody's proud of her for that. It was last Thursday she got the word. She has been admitted to the doctorate program for psychology, and she's thrilled. And she just emailed me and said, or excuse me, she just texted me and said, I'll be the first person on my family on either side in any generation to have been a doctor. And so that's pretty good, man. Like a year ago, she was limping around on a walker and crutches, and we were trying to figure out what the hell was wrong with her. And it was, you know, degenerative bone disease, and she had to have hip replacement, and on and on and on and on. By the way, I don't want to go too much into, you know, hip and joint replacement surgery, because it's going to sound like, and now it's Geriatrics on the Line. Hi, I'm Dr. Felm. And Bob, how are you? I'm great. I got a new leg. Anyway, Phil Proctor's wife had ankle replacement. And as is his wont, because he's a funny guy, he sent an email which in the subject line was ankles away, which I thought was pretty cute. All right, so this is the Monday show. Now, let me just get back to me. I'm sweating like a hog. I've got this red eye and I've got this cold, and all of that put together means there isn't going to be much of a show today, but I am giving you at least this much. And then we'll be back at it gradually as the week progresses, because I got to get back to work, and I'm sure you guys aren't just, you know, you're not going to sit around here for long waiting for me to get my act together. So, you know, we got to do what we got to do. One thing that I can talk to you about a little bit, because I had questions from people over the weekend, and I played some of that as we were coming to the show, is this blues music. I either got people asking me, why do you play that? Why do you like it? Oh, God, Phil, don't play that anymore. Oh, God, here comes Phil with his blues, you know. And I was on this surf music kick for a while. But the story about my affection for blues music might be a good one, because it goes all the way back to when I was 12. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with African Americans, knowing anyone who was black at that time, or knowing any blues musicians at that time. It has everything to do with a kid that I knew in school who was about a year older than me, named Richard Wood. Actually, his name was Dick Wood, and I'm telling you the truth, that's his name. But we don't use that name anymore. We use Richard, because we're oh so modest these days, aren't we? Have we gotten dumber or what as a society? Anyway, so Richard, I will say, was a kid. He was in my class about maybe a half a year older than me. And we got to talking, and he says, you know, as kids do, hey, you want to, you know, hang out on Saturday or something? And I go, okay. So I got on my little bicycle and I rode my bike down to his house. And this was going to be a Saturday whatever, man. You know what kids do? They walk around, they go to the stores, they buy some candy, they buy a, you know, a soda, sit on the curb, spray people with it, you know, look at the girls walking by, you know, walk to some interesting place like a morgue or a, you know, there was a morgue in Arcadia that we used to walk by and just look at and try to, I don't know, just imagine ghosts or something. I don't know what our trip was, but it was particularly interesting at that. I forget what we did, in fact. I don't think we did anything. I think we tried to climb on the roof of it once. Anyway, on this day, he says, come on. So we get on our bikes, and we ride our bikes up this drain. This is Arcadia, California, in 1964 or 5. So it can't be, it's as white bread as it gets. There were white folks and there were Hispanic folks. And the Hispanic folks and the white folks, well, there was a whole bunch of rich ones, and then there was a lot of people who were sort of moderate income. And then they, on, you know, south of Huntington Drive across from the racetrack, then things started to get a little tough. Or maybe lower than that. Anyway, we ride our bike over to the Arcadia Public Library, and what are we doing here? He says, come on, you know. So these two 12 and 13-year-old kids go to the back of this library, where what they used to call the audiovisual department. I don't know what they call it now. Maybe everything's audiovisual now, you know. I said to a guy the other day, I bet you got a bookcase full of those books. He goes, we don't have bookcases anymore. So, you know, I do, but you're right. I don't read anything that's in it. I read my phone now. So we go back to the audiovisual department. Here's a kid, he's 13 years old, Richard Wood. His brother, this kid came from a family of seven. I think there were seven kids. His older brother, an older sister, two older sisters, and when they finally got to Richard, that's four. Then a younger brother and a younger sister. And this little sister, they spanned an age from like 3 all the way up to like 24 or something. I don't know if that has anything to do with the fact that he dug blues. It could be that there was a folk music thing happening in those days. But nonetheless, we walk into this audiovisual department and sit down at one of these turntables that they gave you. And for the next 3 hours, he started pulling all these albums out of the wall. And we were listening to them. Lead Belly, Lightnin' Hopkins, Sun House, Blind Lemon Jefferson, all those names that you've heard and that you've made jokes about. You know, everything, every name, every kind of blues, acoustic and then electric blues, white bluesmen, like, well, there was Spider John Conner, and, or Spider John Conner, and there was Tony Glover, the harmonica player, and of course, Paul Butterfield and Charlie Musselwhite, Sonny Boy Williamson, who is the, I think I played a track of his, Junior Wells, Buddy Guy. We listened to this for 3 hours, and this was my education. And I never really asked him. I said, how'd you get it? Why are you interested in this music? He just loved it. And we're 13, you know, 12 and 13. And I learned the difference between, oh, and Sonny, Terry and Bronnie McGee, that's another one. And I learned the difference between the acoustic blues, what some people call rustic or I don't know, and the city blues or electrified blues like Butterfield, like Musselwhite, like, well, you know, Muddy Waters. Another big name, Muddy Waters. And I never looked back. Now, it just so happened at that time, popular music was heavily influenced by the blues. So all these bands were coming out, the Rolling Stones, particularly the Rolling Stones, them, Van Morrison and them. A lot of these British bands were playing sort of blues-informed music. And, you know, it's very interesting to note that American kids didn't listen to blues until they heard British guys doing it. And then they began to investigate it a little bit more. Maybe that was why. Because I know that both of us were Rolling Stone fans, and they played Willie Dixon's Little Red Rooster and Solomon Burke and all of these artists, American artists, who had been ignored largely by a white audience. B.B. King, Albert King. You know, you could just go on. And you say, well, everybody was into the blues in those days, right, Phil? When they finally heard it through rock and roll, they were. But I don't know of too many people, especially at 12 years of age, that were sitting at the public library listening to Sonny Terry and Bronnie McGee singing Long Gone Like a Turkey Through the Corn, or My Key Don't Unlock Her Door, and you know, all kinds of pseudo-sexual songs like that. At least we didn't know they were until we listened to the lyrics and then sort of figured it out, you know, and then read some books about it. And then that's the other thing. We got a hold of these records. I think the man's name was John Lomax. There's a lot of Lomaxes. I don't know if you've noticed that. There's Louis Lomax, the TV personality. There was Alan Lomax, who I don't know who he was. And there was a John Lomax, I believe. And John Lomax worked for the State Department. And this was the Depression. And there were all of these tremendous sort of make-work projects going on for people who were out of work. You know, especially they had like the public works project and where artists could, you know, sculpt things for public buildings. And this particular gentleman, John Lomax, traveled around the South with a tape recorder, it might have been a wire recorder. And I have never seen, if I've seen a wire recorder, I wouldn't recognize it. I'm not sure I understand the technology, but I get that it works. He traveled around the South in a car with this recorder for the United States. Might have been the State Department or the Department of Interior, but I know that eventually a lot of these artists did travel overseas, sponsored by the U.S. State Department, and recorded the music of these early blues legends. Robert Johnson is a great example of a Delta blues musician from Mississippi who was discovered and taken to Chicago. I say taken to Chicago. I mean, you know, would you like to go to Chicago, Robert? Yes. Okay. So they, you know, he willingly went, but probably wouldn't have been able to find his way. It just been him, you know, on his own. And he was very much the small town guy in the big city, Robert Johnson was. He was very young. He was 19. And I don't think he lived very long. But he gave us songs like Crossroads Blues, which was immortalized by a band called Cream with the song Crossroads. So, you know, that's kind of how all that plays out. But John Lomax had his recorder and would stop literally on the road at the end of a row of cotton or at the end of the row of soy or whatever it was that the workers were picking or were processing. And and they would break for lunch and they would sing and he would record their music. This is how Lead Belly was discovered, who's another giant in the history of American blues. So we listened to those records, and you gotta have, for me, and maybe it was because I've always loved history. It wasn't a hard thing. It wasn't a hard thing for me to do. Richard liked it because, you know, he liked the music, but I can't imagine too many people buying these records and listening to. And this is who? What is your name?
Oh, my name is Elmer, right? Yeah, that's it.
You know, so hey. Thank you. If you don't want to check the records out at the library, just call me up. I'll come to your house and pretend I'm one of them. So that was another fun thing. And from that day forward, I was steeped in blues and rhythm and blues. And I got to know rhythm and blues. What's the difference between that and you know, blues? And I was talking to, I forget who it was, over at F's for Family, probably Mark Wilmore, one of our writers. And we were talking about Wolfman Jack. Everybody talks about Wolfman Jack as being a rock. And by the way, Wolfman Jack, kids today, and this was a radio artist. Wolfman Jack was a pure radio performance artist. I aspired to that when I got into radio. I wanted to do, that's what I want to do there. You know, I want to create theater like that cat there. And we have none of that left in our business. I say our business, I still claim it as my business, but there's nobody I would recognize in that business today as anyone that I'd have anything to talk about with. Not in terms of, you know, work on air. I'm sure there's a lot of really nice people, but there's nothing you're really going to, who am I going to talk to that's on the air right now about creating, you know, theater like that? And Wolfman Jack was, to this day, there's never been anybody like him. Never. And, but one of the things, I didn't mean to get off on a tangent, but one of the things about him was he didn't play rock and roll. He played rhythm and blues. Everybody thinks Wolfman Jack played. He played rhythm and blues records that made the top 40, yeah. You know, like I Only Have Eyes for You by the Flamingos. God knows, you know, Manish Boy by Muddy Waters. Some of these songs that would make the top 40, but he didn't play exclusively. He didn't play rock and roll. You know, he wasn't playing Elvis Presley. Played Chuck Berry. He played rhythm and blues. And so you could listen to him at night once you got a little bit of an education and you loved this music. And then that was the next thing we did. We tuned him. I'd never heard of this cat. And there's Richard saying, now we got to listen to this guy, Wolfman Jack. Really? Yeah. Well, where he's right here. He's on this dial, but you got to, you know. And it was in L.A. on XERB, but you could still, you know, it was like the thing was, he was broadcasting from Mars. Now, I don't know where the studio was, man. I think XERB was in L.A., but the stick was in Mexico. That is the transmitter. Which meant that it had a lot of miles to carry before it got to the station, I guess, right? I still don't know how it works, but XERB and the mighty, and it's today known as the Mighty 1090. That used to be XERB. And there was the XERF, but Wolfman Jack played that music. He played rhythm and blues. He played blues. And he did cool things, and he had a wolf howling sound effect, and everything was just, it was a beautiful thing. So that was that. And then, of course, you get into radio eventually, and you go, okay, I'm all set to play all these blues records. What? Especially my first gigs were in the South. No, 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 no. And don't, you know, I love my friends in the South, and I love the South. I honestly do, but don't give me this stuff about how, well, now we are very egalitarian. No. But although the Allman Brothers and bands like that were definitely influenced by And the Allman Brothers, a terrific band, you know, definitely influenced by blues music. So a lot of that Southern rock. But those were the times, and that's why today, as this old codger, I still listen to that and love it and relax to it. I honestly do. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because, I'm such a man. No, I think it's just because, I don't know. I think it's the kind of music you figure anybody could play. Maybe I could play it. Maybe someday still I could be a great blues star. All right. Now, let me just tell you that here on the West Coast, it's about 6:25. I'm speaking now to my live audience that may be listening to us streaming. In a few minutes, I'm going to go and I'm going to do a Facebook Live probably around 7 o'clock on the Pacific Coast, out here on the West Coast. So 10 o'clock East. And give everybody an update over there and let you know what's happening. I'm freaking sweating like a pig in this freaking studio. It's the month of October, and it's still like, you know, too warm outside. So we'll do that. Get everybody up to date on that. Also, a quick mention that we're going to be back at Sketchfest, the San Francisco Sketchfest, at the end of January. So, as I mentioned the other night, just circle the whole month of January. Don't do anything that month until I tell you when specifically our date is, and then you can begin to chart other things out. Okay, cool, great. Don't forget to run over and grab yourself a backstage pass, a subscription to our website if you don't have one already. If you don't have one, I don't know how you're watching us live, but hey. My friend Melissa Wolf, who I play Facebook pool with billiards, wants me to take a shot. She's already so I gotta get going, man. I gotta go over and play like video and virtual games and stuff. No, I'm gonna see you guys in about 30 minutes. And for those of you that are listening to this on the download, I want to remind you again to get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com, because this is ordinarily not the kind of show we do. It is a far more ornate and stylized satire of the modern era. Right now, as I speak to you, the Dodgers lead the Houston Astros 3-0. I think Coach Dozier picked 7 games, and when we asked him why, I asked him, "Will you go ahead and you tweet about that, Coach?" He said, "I will, and make sure you say why you believe the Dodgers will win in 7." And he said, "I think because, well, I can't describe it." That's what he wrote down. So that's going to have to suffice. But they're leading here. And, you know, everybody here in L.A. is very excited about this. The local TV station here, Channel 11, after the game is over, then they cut to the local station, right? And what happens with the local stations, it's happening in your town as well, I'm sure. Okay, let's go to the local bar where all the Dodger fans are. Let's go to Jimmy Zapp. Jimmy, how's it going? It's going great here. And then everybody behind him is screaming and jumping up and down and throwing things and picking up ashtrays full of burrito and slamming it down on the heads of their friend. And all of this is going on, and the guy's like this. Yeah! You can't hear anything. And I suppose that's what they want. But then the guy will interview somebody, you know. Okay, let me get in here, Bob. And meanwhile, everybody behind, because the competition is, I hope somebody recognizes me that's watching right now. And, you know, I hope I get recognized by a friend of mine. So they'll jump up and down and they'll scream and they'll, you know, stick their fingers at the camera and everything. When I was in Atlanta and the Atlanta Braves clinched the National League pennant back in 92, I think it was, because that was the year I was in Atlanta, so it would have had to have been 92. And the local station sent a reporter up into Buckhead, which is where a lot of nightclubs are. And everybody was screaming and everybody was yelling. But there was one woman to his left who was just smiling into the camera like a Hollywood starlet. She didn't move other than to just smile, just stare and smile. Smile and stare. A beautiful smile, a big, beautiful, bright smile. But while everybody else was jumping up and down and going ape, she was just staring up at the camera and smiling. And the guy's doing his report, and I realized that's very compelling, you know. She's doing something different. But the thing that really caught my eye is the fact I knew her. And she was one of our production assistants at the station. So anyway, when I saw her later on, I said, you realize I saw you on TV, you were smiling. Yes, how else was I going to get any attention? I said, well, you got mine. I wasn't sure who you were, though, if that, well, that's a problem. Yeah, you should do that more often, and I'll recognize you when you smile on TV. So that was, that's my one story about the World Series and people jumping up and down on camera and, the local flavor, as they call it. All right, so I've talked enough here with this this cold that I have. My mouth is like dry, as if I've been. I can't even compare it to anything. I've never done anything illicit, certainly, so it couldn't be that. Like I have been drinking my water. How about that? I haven't hydrated. Here is a 2-day-old Pepsi Light. So hold on. I say Pepsi Light. It's actually a Diet Pepsi, but they used to call them Pepsi Light. I think in Mexico it's Pepsi Light, and here in the States it's Diet Pepsi. So I really thank you for your indulgence, folks. It's one of those hazards that I encounter in this profession, having a bad throat or a chest cold or something when you do the things that I do. Okay, sports fans, thank you very much. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. And again, for those of you without a backstage pass, get one at philhenryshow.com. That is a subscription to our website. We've got 30,000-plus hours of archived material. We also have some new Miami material. We're going to be getting in even more Miami material, as well as some Ventura. Man, it goes back. That's like 26 years ago. So, and you can only get it at philhenryshow.com, especially the quality of the recordings are optimum. All right? So do that. I'll see you tomorrow. And I will see you on Facebook Live here in about 30 minutes, okay? So head over to Facebook Live. And it's not Facebook Live. It's facebook.com/ Phil Hendry Fans, PHANS. Again, facebook.com/ Phil Hendry Fans, fans spelled PHANS. That was my stupid idea. And I didn't realize how dumb an idea it was until I began to have to give the actual address on the air. And I realized I better spell fans because people are going to get it wrong. So again, it's facebook.com/ Phil Hendry Fans, spelled PHANS. That's where we will do our Facebook Live here in about 30 minutes. And until then, I wish you a very, very pleasant good evening. And the Dodgers ahead 3-0. But hey, by the time you hear this, tomorrow, maybe Houston won. And I say tomorrow, meaning Monday, if you're listening to it right now. Tomorrow would be Tuesday. The more I try to explain that, the Phil Hendry Show is executive produced by me, Phil Hendry. For Siempre Incorporated, all rights reserved on Podcast One.